This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of August 31st. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Well, it's still Sunday night, so that I'm A-okay. That's how I judge these things. If we're past the midnight hour and I start hearing Wilson Pickett in the back of my mind, I know I'm kind of in trouble.
Yeah, don't let the calendar control your life, bro. I mean, if the calendar is just because it flips over one couple minutes after midnight, doesn't mean, you know, you don't have to still be doing well.
Okay. Well, but if my living
unless you're
room,
a pumpkin.
Hey, I was going to say, if my living room turns into a pumpkin, you are so in trouble.
If your living room turns into a pumpkin, you're in trouble, buddy.
Yeah, I got to start using different psychotropic drugs, I think.
Okay. I don't know how we ended up in the 60s, but let's get back into the 2020s.
I'm a child of the 60s, baby.
Aren't we all? Oh, wait a minute.
All right. I hear somebody shouting, okay, boomer, in the back of my mind. Okay.
And I hear the Police song, Born in the 50s, in my ears.
Wow.
All right. Everybody fighting the coronavirus worldwide, keep up the fight, especially the frontline people. Thank you very much. We've had a drop in the number of infections slightly here in Tokyo, which means we really need to bear down and do even better.
That's
to
right.
Keep the spread from going.
Yep.
On this week's show, we've got a telephone chat with Hiroshima utility man Jose Pereira, and we're going to discuss the CARP, and we've got mini tracks, our power ranking segment, and some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, well, on Wednesday, I was very fortunate to catch up with Jose Pereira of the Hiroshima CARP. It was a real pleasure. I know you're going to like listening to this guy. And I want to say again, John says this about a lot of the players who speak in their second or third language.
Don't steal my lines. Okay.
But fearless is a good word. He's very, he became very, he wasn't comfortable, but he just did it. He was really game, and we really appreciate that. So thank you, Jose. And we talked about a huge number of things. He's from the same area of Venezuela as Ernesto Mejia of the Cebu Lions. In fact, they play in the same, they played on the same team in Venezuela.
Hmm.
So we talked about, you know, transitions from Venezuela to the Dominican Republic to America to Japan, and there's a lot of that and lessons learned. So I'm just going to let Jose take it away.
Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Jose Pereira of the Hiroshima CARP. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And it's been hard to get a hold of you. You're traveling around in this COVID-19 world. It's a how is the COVID-19 affecting you?
First, I don't get to see my family here.
Right.
Because I'm not the only one.
No.
We had some guys that have the same situation, and we fight through. So
yeah.
We don't have something to do, so fight through it.
Yeah. You've had a kind of a long career in MLB as a utility guy, and you played the corner outfield and all around the infield. But this year you're getting to play a lot more, I suppose. Hopefully you'll get maybe 300, 400 at bats. Is that a first time for you in one team?
As a player, you want to play every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be in the lineup almost every day.
Uh-huh.
So that feels good. The card, they even give me the opportunity to play.
Mm-hmm.
That feels good.
Was that a big reason for your coming to Japan?
I say I can I can't stay like in America for play ball.
Okay.
I just wanna try something different. That's why I wanna go to Japan.
Okay. I know Japan is so different from where you played in the States, but also, how old were you when you turned professional?
17.
Wow. And you're from the country in Venezuela, and how was that adjustment for you? I think first year in a Dominican Republic, or?
Yeah, I was turned professional when I was 17. My first year was at Dominican.
Mm-hmm.
That was when I started playing professional, my first year.
Okay, how'd that go? Was that an easy transition for you?
I say yes, because that country, they speak Spanish, mm-hmm. and I have some other friends that I play for the Yankee.
Okay.
And that was easy for me.
Oh.
Because I know a couple guys.
Okay.
Before we had to play in Dominica.
Okay, because I know the guys from other countries who go to the Dominican, sometimes it's not easy if they don't have friends.
Yeah.
Because even though they speak Spanish, it is a different culture, it's a different country. So.
Yeah, well, for me, it was easy because Yankees signed a lot of guys from my country.
Uh-huh.
And they play with me. We play together. So
oh, nice.
That was easy for me.
Oh, good. That's really, I know. So how much of baseball is about feeling confident and comfortable? And so, but second year you go to play in the States, and how is, because that's not home.
Oh, yeah. The second year I go to play at Rookie League. That was kind of easy too, because I play with the same group.
Oh, okay.
I play in Dominica.
Oh, okay.
Guys, I play in Dominica. So that was kind of easy for me too.
Okay, so now you come to the Carp and you're with a bunch of Dominican guys. The Carp always have a lot of guys from the Dominican. And I know Alejandro Mejia. I've never met Francois, but most of the guys are really good guys. But they're younger than you. You know, they're young kids, but they've been in Japan. Are they teaching you about Japan? Are you teaching them things and they're teaching you things?
Yeah, I talked to them the first I get here.
Uh-huh.
So they've been teaching me and tell me everything about Japan.
Oh.
So that's why I feel a lot of comfortable right now. But the first I kinda say like, oh man, I don't know anybody here.
Yeah.
I don't know the language, but they've been huge for me.
Uh-huh.
To like tell me some advice.
Uh-huh.
from here, and I thank them for that.
Oh yeah. I know, like I said, I know Mejia is a very friendly guy, and he seems really helpful. So, I mean, obviously it's different, but on the other hand, a lot of the Latin guys tell me it's coming to Japan is not so hard because they've had to already adjust to playing in America. They've already played in foreign countries. It's a normal for them. Was that the case for you?
Yeah, because we've been in that situation because we play at an early age and I go to Dominican first and then I go to America.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of the same transition because it's kind of like same situation.
Okay.
So we're coming here, it's kind of like the first year when I go to America. It's kind of like that because I don't know the language.
Right.
And I'm being in that situation, you know, and I cannot know what I have to do to adjust my quitter as possible.
Right. Now, also, now you have to work with, again, like in the States, you have to work with the coaches, and sometimes they don't speak your language. And how is that harder when you're dealing with a coach who maybe through an interpreter?
I say no, because the coaches from the team, they cannot speak a little bit English.
Okay.
So whatever they want us to, like, tell me, mm-hmm. and they figure out how to tell me.
Okay.
So that's what I like from them, and I feel comfortable, and I try to, like, learn Japanese too, and they teach me.
What kind of expressions in Japanese do you use? Because I see the Latin players talking with the Japanese guys sometimes on the field, and even like young guys who are only just here a short time, and I'm wondering what language are they speaking?
We speak like they can speak Spanish and English too.
Okay.
So we, in the middle of the conversation, we figure out like how to understand shit.
Okay.
So that's what we will enjoy. Like no matter what, we don't speak like the same language,
uh-huh.
but we're trying to figure out like how we can understand each other.
Okay, have you ever had an experience where you thought you understood and you were completely wrong?
No, not yet.
Okay. Well, hopefully that won't happen.
Yeah, hopefully not, because like I say, they make sure I understand whatever they want to tell me.
Okay. Because even, you know, like sometimes Japanese uses English words that have a different meaning in Japan.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, so like I know I use this expression a lot, but, you know, they say sinker. You know, he throws sinker, but sometimes a Japanese sinker is a screwball.
Yeah, so, yes, I know.
Yeah, okay. You know more than me probably by now. So... Okay, well, let's talk about the Japanese baseball and your adjustment to Japanese baseball. What kind of things have you had to maybe adjust to your approach or the way you prepare?
I say everything.
Okay, wow.
It's baseball. Mm-hmm. The way they play is different, so you have to can adjust everything, because the pitchers here,
mm-hmm.
they don't throw hard, but they very smart,
mm.
and they make you if you don't have the right approach,
mm-hmm.
they make you look bad.
Yeah.
So I kinda at the first I've been like hitting well, but at the middle of the season,
uh-huh.
I kinda like lose the confidence a little bit, because they're very smart and they throw so many pitchers, they make you like think too much.
Yeah.
They can do that, they good and that. But mm-hmm. you have to be like very smart.
Mm-hmm.
Very aggressive, and the thing can, like, you can use to help you,
mm-hmm.
like is like be selective.
Yeah,
you have to be selective and help play.
Yeah, I mean, I watch a lot of the pitchers, and they try so hard to make you chase out of the zone.
Yes.
It must be really hard to hold back on some of those pitches on the corner.
Yes.
I know in America, it's too simple to say you're just looking fastball, because I know that's not exactly true, but you look fastball and fastball counts, but here fastball counts aren't as big a deal.
Yeah, like I say, it's not hard because we had a player that come here and they had like big season. Mm-hmm. So I think for the first year for me, I don't say hard, but I kinda wanna make adjustment every about because they be different. It's just like they have so many teachers and they use it every count. So that's make you like, okay, that make you think too much.
Right. Right.
And I kinda like the first I kinda now figure out like I say how they teach it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they throw so many pitches in every count.
Right. Yeah, and different pitcher because they only play 12 innings. This year only 10 innings. And they got 26 guys on the roster, and they got 5 guys on the bench, 5 guys in the clubhouse, so they can use a lot of pitchers.
They can use a lot of pitchers, and they have the timing movements, you know?
Right.
The timing movements, and you have to be aware of the timing.
Sure.
And then they have so many pitchers they can just in every count.
Yeah.
So you have to be like real, real focused.
Right. And when you say think too much, because that's really that's a great introduction to Japanese baseball. They make you think too much.
Yeah.
And almost like the coach, because I know the coaches with the approach sometimes, or the way the coaches and the managers explain everything, it's a lot of information.
Yes.
How do you simplify? How do you make this, you know, get this down to the most important thing when there's so much information and there's so many different pictures?
Yeah. When I say they make you think too much, I talk about the pitchers.
Uh huh. I know you weren't talking about the coaches, but I'm saying also when they have the meeting in Japan, they like to say, this guy throws this in situation A, and this guy throws that in situation B, and this and there's
they make it simple for me.
Oh, excellent. So
they don't tell me like so many guys. They make it simple for me.
Oh, good.
How I simplify, so I try to not think too much.
Okay.
Get a good pitch and hit it.
Yeah.
That's it.
See the ball hit the ball?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, that's kind of it's kind of a foreign, it's kind of an imported player's way to play Japanese baseball because the Japanese teams, when they have only 5 teams in the league, so they see the same guy over and over and over, and they get so much data.
That's what I talking with Francois and Mejia.
Yeah,
I think that's the make you because they know right away because we play so much with the same team.
Yeah,
like every other day, and they get to know you quick.
Yeah. What kind of things have you learned since you've been here? Because it seems like you're learning a lot.
Yes, they've been teaching me a lot.
Okay.
So I kinda always ask. I always ask to the coaches, to the players. I always ask. I don't scare like to ask.
Uh-huh.
I ask questions every day
about
the game, about situation, about because I have to. I wanna make the adjustment. I wanna do good for the team, and I have to ask because I play in the country. It's my first year.
Right.
I know it's baseball, but they play different. So I wanna know as soon as possible, I can do good for the team.
Yeah. Were you like that when you went to America when you were 18?
Uh, I say yes, but when I go to America my first year, I was 17. I was a rookie.
Yeah.
And we kind of learning. But in some ways, I feel the same because I kind of learning the way Japanese play.
Uh-huh.
I say, in some ways, yes.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now I almost forgot to ask, but so you played so many positions in the majors, but in Japan, I guess you've been mostly left field and first base. What position is your favorite position to play?
I don't have a favorite.
Oh, okay.
I just want to play ball. If you ask me, like, what position I want to play, I say left field.
Oh, okay. It's comfortable.
Yeah, for me it's more comfortable, and that's the position I've been playing the most my last 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
So
now, what we talked a little bit about the pitching in Japan. So, how about the rest of the players you've seen, or the, you know, what's your? Could you explain, kind of simply, not an easy question, about how maybe what's Japanese baseball like, you know, to somebody who's only watched a few games or something, somebody who wants to know what's Japanese baseball really like, what would you tell them?
I talked to, like, you know, Geraldo Parra.
Uh-huh.
And we're on the same page. Here you have to play baseball, like smart baseball.
Oh.
So you don't get in America, you as a hitter we only look for fastball because they throw hard.
Uh-huh.
And they throw it. So here you have to play baseball. Nine innings you have to play baseball, like you have to think the situation because they can bowl. Every time they can do a squeeze play,
right.
Every time, you know, so it's different.
It's more different. More fundamental,
yeah.
Kind of baseball.
And you get to see things you don't see in America. Like we're winning like nine runs and they steal the base. they use that, and you know it's different.
And nobody throws at them.
Yeah.
If you steal a base.
So I like it.
All right. Well, this went a little long, but I appreciate so much your sharing your experience with us, and hopefully we'll get to see you at the ballpark pretty soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Pirella, thank you again. It was a real pleasure.
Yes, Jose, and the CARP PR people, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yeah, don't want to forget them. They were up taking bullets for this one, you know, to make this happen. And it was not easy connecting because they were right in the middle of a move between the time we started planning the interview
right.
And the time it actually took place. So, so kudos to the CARP. Okay, John, tell me, what would you like to comment on?
Well, I just have a couple quick points since the interview ran a little bit long. I shouldn't be floored, actually, to hear that some of the coaches with Hiroshima are confident enough in their English ability to maybe communicate or get their mm-hmm. point across with players who are not actual native English speakers, because that's a challenge sometimes. But you hear Jose talking about that, and you know, it hit me that maybe some of these coaches, obviously we have a new manager with Shinji Sasaoka as mm-hmm. the first year manager there, but so that probably means that there's some new coaches new to the game of coaching. But when you hear you have a coach and you have an interpreter nearby and you have a foreign player, and basically, as a coach, you're a teacher, right? So you're mm-hmm. going through, and it's repetition. You've got to tell this guy, okay, remember, keep your elbow in here. We want to do this with your hands. We want to make sure you're not rolling over on these pitches, blah, blah, blah. But you're repeating the same thing, and the interpreter's standing there, and it's a different player, it's a different year, but it's the same things that you're telling even a different player. Mm-hmm. So after a while, you would imagine the coaches get very used to what's going on, the words that are being used, the verbiage, and they have some knowledge of English. So, yeah, I can imagine how some of these coaches would remember and be able to communicate that to some of the players on their own. Mm-hmm. And to be able, especially when you're going through a drill or something, just to be able to help them through it and remind them to do certain things and certain techniques and the things that they're trying to coach them. So I guess it shouldn't be surprising, but it still kind of is, you know. It still kind of is. And I loved what you said about, you know, you didn't get much feedback on it, but you always, we see a lot of the players that particularly in almost every game, or probably every game, the catchers and pitchers talking with each other. And you see the pitchers joking, and most of the time the catchers with the mask and the glove over their face, we don't know if they're laughing at the joke or they're just laughing because they're pretending to understand or what's going on. But it seems like a lot of fun. And I always wonder, what did they say? What did the Japanese player hear? And are they really communicating? It's really fun. So I that was the first thing that kind of jumped out at me.
Yeah, well, I remembered that from the first one was from Chunichi Dragons catcher Ariel Martinez, and he was chatting with the umpire at second base, you know, after he was as a base runner. And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. and then I'm seeing him chatting with his teammates, and I'm thinking, this guy has learned a lot. And yeah. And I know that there are some imported players. I'll say there are two. I'm going to include him, although I don't have the data to back it up, as guys who've learned a lot of Japanese in a short time. And there are people who learn languages very quickly. And another one is Levon Moinello of the Hawks. His Japanese is quite aggressive. I mean, he's very, again, fearless with his Japanese.
Mm.
And that's the only language we can converse in because he doesn't speak much English. But and a Cuban friend of mine told me that that was always he is kind of a fearless guy, and going out and not afraid of making mistakes, which to me was really the thing about Jose Perella that really struck me. No, I'm always asking questions. I'm never afraid of not knowing. I'm afraid more of not asking questions and not knowing.
Yeah, yeah.
And
which
I really,
is impressive.
Yeah, so that impressed me. And the other thing that impressed me, and we talked about it because it gets to the point of what Japanese baseball is really about, which is many times in Japan, it seems that the purpose of any exercise is to confuse the issue or make it more complicated, because it seems like complication is sometimes a synonym for quality.
Mm.
You know, it's sort of a working definition. Oh, it's complicated. It must be good, you know?
Right. It's too simple. Then it's not going to work.
Exactly. Exactly. It's kind of a trademark of Japanese organizational thinking. And so very often, and I've talked about this on the show and in my blog, that the coaches like to give out so much information. So I was very pleased when he said, no, the coaches, you know, they keep it really simple for me. They don't overdo it. Maybe it's because, you know, maybe a little of it is the Dennis Sarfati rule.
Which is,
if you got a meeting and the guy is tuning out, don't invite him to the meeting. Or the guy's asking questions just to point out how silly your answers are going to be. Then don't invite him to the meeting and put that guy on a different program.
Right.
And so it could well be that, I've long suspected that Japanese players versus one of the differences with a lot of Japanese players compared to their imported teammates is the ease with which and the comfort level the Japanese players have with masses of data that the coaches are feeding them.
just the processing of it or the actual retention and implementation?
No, I think just the processing, as seeing as that's part of the norm. You know, we've got five league opponents and we're going to know everything about them, and it's part of the process and we're used to it. We're dealing with it. And some of them are good at processing it.
But that's just an organization that comes with learning kanji probably because...
Well, yeah, language skills are a huge part of that. Okay.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the... because of, as you said, there's the extra filter of the interpreter, you know, in the meetings. Okay, so
right.
We're talking about something that's very detailed and precise, and which maybe the interpreter can manage in either English or Japanese, but perhaps not both, because it's mm-hmm. very specialized stuff. And it may reinforce the fact that often for imported players, the best teacher is... don't think too much, you know, don't. Mm. And Jose's comment that the Japanese pitchers are really good at making you think too much. And that he attributed his difficulties in May. All right. I'm going back into a typical calendar year in July to the fact that he was thinking too much.
Right. And, you know, this was a long interview and you talked about a lot of things with him, and he brought up some great points, but that was one of my points as well. And I knew you were going to talk about it, but I'm like, you know, I know Jim is going to pick up on this, but I'm sorry, this was a thing too, because I think you might recall maybe 2 years ago, maybe it's 3 years ago. Somebody's getting old, not me though. But
yeah,
I did.
It must be me.
Yeah.
I got the age on this side of Tokyo. Okay.
Okay. I'll give you all my extra stuff too. I remember doing some interviews for Dragon Soul, who wrote a blog post about the Dragons, and I talked to Yota Kyoda, who I think was a rookie at the time, mm-hmm. and he gave some specific information about having to think too much when he's batting in the number two hole.
Mm-hmm.
And while he did give some specifics, it just is a difficult process to go through, thinking that, okay, if there's a runner on first and then, you know, we're in the first inning and the leadoff guy gets on, now I've got to remember all this. He didn't, you know, he didn't say all this, but he just said there are a lot of things to remember. I'm not just batting for myself. Essentially, he said, I'm batting for the team. I'm trying to move the runner over. I'm reading the sign. There could be a hit and run. There could be this and that. I mean, there's so much thinking going on, right?
Mm.
Whereas he said if he hit lower in the lineup where he hit leadoff, all he had to do was go up there and take his cuts.
Mm.
And so when Jose talked about them making you think too much and them playing smart baseball, I thought, yes, that's it. You know, this is a great perspective about what players are going through in the batter's box. It's not that, you know, they missed a fastball and they're a terrible player. It's that they missed a fastball, and now what is the pitcher going to do because they missed that fastball? What are they going to come back with? And I know they've been trying to get me out, especially since we don't have them in the Central League, so I know Jose wasn't talking about that. But in the six-game series in the Pacific League that they had been playing, what is the pitching plan? They figured it out, and now in game five of these six-game series, of missing a fastball in a certain zone – takes on a different kind of connotation in terms of the game. And so I just loved it. I think you can safely say if you're not a Carp fan and you hear Jose give us this information and you hear these words just in this whole interview, I think you might start to root for him personally, because that's what happened to me. I'm like, you know, when he got here, I hadn't heard much about him, and I was thinking that the Carp just trying to fill in a spot and just pick up a foreign player and throw him out there and see what happens and, you know, see if he sticks and all that stuff. But when we get to personalize these guys like this and have them on the show and we hear them talk and hear about what they're going through and about how their families, they don't get to see them, and how the coronavirus is impacting them, and how they're working hard and practice. And just like you said, asking as many questions, because the fear of not knowing is much greater than the fear of going up and failing because they didn't ask the question, perhaps. So it just endears them to, I think, hopefully to baseball fans. And it's easy to root for him now, for sure.
Yeah, he was particularly engaging. And I never know, you know, with the Latin players, I won't say Latin players, but players whose, you know, whose English is not their native language. And goodness knows I'm not always the easiest person to understand in any language. So I just have, it's my hats off to all these guys for sharing. And I know they all do. These people all have stories, and and someday I'll learn to let them tell them.
Well, you know, it was good because you're finally talking to someone who's probably not going to understand every single connotation and every nuance. And so you were kind of quiet this time and you let the guests talk. I liked it.
Hashtag high heat.
Why am I the only one laughing?
I'm letting you talk.
Well, I do tell you this. Speaking of language, we do talk about the fact that these guys they come to Japan and they basically don't learn Japanese. And then you have the guys like Scott Matheson and Alonzo Powell, even, who told us earlier this year, I think it was, that he had stayed in touch with Tsuyoshi Yoda. Mm-hmm. And that's how he got the job as a hitting coach after Yoda became the manager. Maybe it was late last year that we talked to Alonzo, but that these guys, they make an effort both ways, mm-hmm. even though the language communication skills aren't probably great, they still manage to keep these relationships with these guys they played with and competed with and worked out with, and, you know, blood, sweat, and tears and guts and all that stuff. Win or lose, you know, it doesn't really matter if they won or lost.
And and of course, there's always an exception. Yoda is a particularly engaging and outgoing fellow. So, I may have told this story. I was sitting on the Rock 10 bench, and he walked up to me and said, "Alan-san," you know, or "Jim-san," I don't remember which. But we always chatted when he was coaching with the national team, not so much when he was with Rock 10, because I was generally preoccupied with talking to his boss.
Right, others, the higher ups, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Pitching coach, no way.
All right, well, let's transition and talk about the Carp now. I was the one in the Central League preview show or prediction show who said, I see the Carp tumbling in the last place, and I got all the shrieks and all the other stuff. And yes, you know, they're not playing very well at the moment. They had their spell in last place. I keep repeating, no shame in finishing in last place in the Central League this year. I think the only team that's likely not to do that is at this moment, the Yomiuri Giants, probably the Yokohama Bay Stars as well. But anybody who has a bad stretch can have a fall, and anyone who has a good stretch can make a jump. And the Carp, you know, my issue with them going into the season was that I didn't really see who was going to carry the team in terms of the rotation. I thought after a couple of guys, Seiya Suzuki, Ryosuke Kikuchi, and maybe Kosuke Tanaka, who, you know, had some injuries last year but was back, I didn't see a cast that was really going to carry a team through a season and keep that team, you know, in contention. And, you know, Jose has done a good job I think he was playing more earlier on in those first maybe 15 to 25 games, not so much recently, but I don't know. I like what they're doing. I don't think Shinji Sasaoka is doing anything in particular to stand out. You know, he's just a guy in charge. He certainly has been in that organization for a long time. If there is a philosophy, if they have as an organization things that they want to implement and have their players do, I think he can implement that. But I mean, it's not like we see him taking a lot of chances, ascending runners. I know they have a lot of speed, and they're supposed to be a faster team than probably we've seen with the total stolen bases that they have now. But I would say he's more conservative in that respect. But in terms of tactics, I don't think he's going to be that much different from anybody else who's a typical Japanese manager. But they have struggled with the rotation. That has been a problem. Even having to send Daichi Osada, the ace, down to the farm for whatever reason it was. They said injury, and, you know, he really hasn't been that guy who started the season with two complete games. He hasn't been that way since he came back up from the farm. So what are you seeing in the carp, and what are you expecting as we move through these last 60 or the second half of the season?
I don't know what to think about the carp. I see it's sort of, you know who he reminds me? He reminds me a little kind of a carp version of last year's Tsuyoshi Yoda. Because he's trying out everybody. Well, he's trying out everybody in different roles other than, you know, the big name pitchers.
Sasaoka, the manager.
Sasaoka, yes. He's being a little bit like, you know, a little bit of a trial camp this season. Mm. You know, who is it? Atsushi Endo?
Endo today, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's got good stuff, and he's, you know, he's going to get a trial, and Yusuke Nomura has looked good now that he's come back and he's fit. But it's almost like he wants to push guys to see when they're going to break. Starting pitchers. We saw that early with Daichi Osera with, you know, back-to-back complete games to open the season when, you know, and you said it, I think you said it, I'm not certain you said it well, but you said it very insightfully when you said, I see guys who are, you know, in better shape than others, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that's just, and the more I thought, at first I thought, well, they're all pros and I don't want, you know, and part of it, if you look at the results, you always see fluctuations in results. I mean, if everybody's natural ability was to hit 300, most of the guys wouldn't hit 300. They'd hit 250 or 350 or something something else along a curve. So it's always hard to tell based on performance, but you can look, you know, if guys are slower, the guys are running out of steam faster. And I think we have seen that a lot of guys running out of steam, and we have seen managers. I think we've seen managers switching out players, you know, I think dumping regulars more quickly this year. I don't think it applies specifically to the carp, but I'm thinking Hiseyoshi Chono is suddenly a quasi regular.
Yep. Yep.
Pirello was a regular at the start, and he's kind of in that mix with Chono in the outfield now.
Mm-hmm.
Kosuke Tanaka hasn't been as bad. He's got a terrible batting average, but basically everything else has been fine.
Yeah, he started out the season well, though, but yeah.
Yeah, but he's drawing a zillion walks.
So did the whole team.
Yeah. Right, yeah, well, he's drawing a zillion walks, so even though he's batting 201, he's got a, you know, 340 or something on-base percentage. So that's, you know, that's fine for a shortstop. That's no problem. But, yeah, what I see is a lot of experimentation. At first, I didn't have a strong opinion of Sasaoka's ability to manage a pitching staff, oddly enough. You know, it's like, as I said, I think he's going to see how many pitchers he can break like he was broken. So what do I see from them moving forward? I don't see any serious issue. You know, it seems like he's going to have a really good, you know, this is his first year. He was the pitching coach last year, but he's got some new guys in the mix. Masato Morishita seems to be coming along really well. Yusuke Nomura has shown that he looks like Yusuke Nomura again, you know, a guy's sort of a taller version of Yasuhiro Ogawa. they're very similar pitchers. So
yeah, and he's pitching with a lot less traffic. He used to be a high traffic pitcher, walks, hits, and he's having a better situation since he came back here recently.
Yeah, the Carps still have, I mean, they still have an issue with their defense. I'm not as, I mean, this is, sure, this has gone from being a really fast team to being a team more like the Omiuri Giants, a team that's basically not fast, but has fast guys.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue for the Carp going forward is, can we still play Hiroshima Carp, as you know, you alluded to this, can they still play Hiroshima Carp style baseball, which is really aggressive base running and really good defense? And I don't see the defenses there. I don't see the base running as being particularly there.
Nope.
I think it's a challenge for them to adopt a kind of different style, or to adopt a style that works with the personnel they have. Because for years, you know, the car, as I think I said this in the preseason show, we know what to expect because every CARP manager more or less does the same thing.
Yep.
So moving forward, I certainly see them as a more deep and talented team than the Yakult Swallows. And you said there's no shame finishing last, but I think there is a shame finishing lower than the Yakult Swallows.
Hashtag high heat.
Well,
and I don't say that any out of any sort of animus or feeling of betrayal, because that, you know, they were my first team I followed in Japan, but I see them being fairly, you know, they're fairly beaten up. They're just getting they just got their regular catcher back. People talk about, I don't really go on a Swallows diatribe, but they're pretty mixed up. I see a lot of talent, but they seem sort of like, I don't know what, Edward Scissorhands kind of creation.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get out of the trees and back into the water with the carp.
They should be better than the Swallows. They have a superstar in Seiya Suzuki, who's played fairly at really the bottom level of his ability right now.
Do you think? Because this is what my opinion is. I thought when they had the good start, I thought Seiya Suzuki was a very inspired player. The swing was different. He had a lot of life. And then when they started to go bad, his swing went with them. And I don't see any life. I don't see as much life, I should say. Because on occasion, when he gets, you know, when pitchers make mistakes, he jumps all over them. But I don't see the life in his bat. And I just wonder if that was a spirit thing. Because, yeah, I look at the pitching and I think, okay, yeah, you talked about Morishita. I wanted to talk about Chris Johnson and his 0-6 record and his 5.22 ERA. And that being a combination of some bad luck and some bad moments. And some bad run support and some bad defense. But I look at Suzuki and I'm thinking, here's a guy who his swing looks like a beaten man's swing. Mm. You know, he doesn't look like, you know, he did everything he could early on and they were winning some games, but he can't keep up that pace and have them win games. And so he's more or less picking his spots. You know, like I said, when he gets mistakes, he's jumping all over them, but I don't think he thinks that they can win this pennant, and that's what his swing looks like now. I don't know, but that's the impression I got from him.
Well, that's as valid as any, I suppose. I don't really have a counter to that. I just see him as being such a quality player that it doesn't really concern me. I mean, his ups and downs are going to happen. It doesn't concern me.
I'm not even talking about the results. I'm talking about.
I know you're not.
The swing. Yeah,
and that doesn't bother me either. I mean,
Bobby Valentine had a line about a player's swing at some point in the season where he needed to give the guy a break because he said something that we won't say on these podcast airwaves, but something very unpleasant about a player's swing. And it could be fatigue that I'm seeing. It might just be a little bit of the hot summer because it's much hotter and they play outside. So maybe that's what it is. But I just don't see
that. We don't know. There's lots of things going on. We can't, you know, this year is such a weird year that we really can't, you know, it's sort of like one effect we don't understand about the coronavirus is how it affects athletes differently. You know,
lot of isolation, how it affects people differently.
Sure.
So, especially these players, because they have to be more isolated than maybe you or myself. We are still going out to the office now, but I don't think they take any extra. I'm hoping they don't take any extra trips, you know, to the store or anything, because they're higher status, I guess, in the baseball world. So
but again, I don't know, and I will take your word for it that his swing does not look the same.
It's uninspired.
Uninspired. Yeah, that could be. I mean, I've seen him. I don't watch rigorously every CARP game. I really can't chime in. I see him you know, I see him playing hard, but I can't say any more than that. I'll just go back to the fact that I trust in his quality. He didn't get where he is by being, you know, whimsical or not motivated or not courageous,
a
good athlete. So I don't have, you know, there could be something that's working against that we don't know. But my guess is I'll just go with the fact that, you know, he's done it in the past and he's always been very motivated. It could have been, you know, also knowing what little I do of him, it could have well have been that forced into the COVID-19 personal training routine more than he would have liked on his own, he might have done something wrong. He's a fairly aggressive and adventurous trainer, although I think he's also quite smart. He strikes me in that respect as being sort of a fielding variety of Yu Darvish, in the sense that he seems to be really aggressive in acquiring knowledge about physical training. So I doubt he did anything really dumb. Like, you know, if famous guy for that was Kazuhiro Kiyohara, it's like every year, one year he'd be, I'm going to train as a pro wrestler over there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And one year it's going to be an NFL lineman. And this is a guy who's just like, you know, he never knew what to expect. He was always doing whatever he read, you know, in a weekly magazine one day and said, "This is it, the secret to life." So I don't see it. He's the key to that team. I actually like the starting pitching. Sasoka seems to have decided on, you know, on a bullpen routine he likes, but if he likes it, I'm not certain the fans are buying it. It's a patchwork quilt. So
yeah, I'm not sure.
The bullpen is going to be a question. But I think most of the pieces are pretty good. I think they're no worse than four of the other Central League teams.
Okay. All right.
Three of the other Central League teams, excuse me. Oh, they are worse than the Giants. Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's make a four-seam transition and go to our mini track segment, and we can talk about the carp a little bit more. But I had in my head, when I get ready to do these power rankings, I say, okay, who's hot right now? But the reason we do it at the end of the month is so that we can look at the month as a whole. And so the team I had on top just happens to be hot, particularly right now, but it was the team that ended up with the most wins in NPV in August, and that's the Lotte Marines. And, you know, I'm looking at the most impressive part of their run in August to 16 wins, and that was the schedule. And I know you're going to say, well, they just about play everybody, and they tied the Hawks with the most wins with 16, so it wasn't like they dominated, but they were up there. They started off playing the Eagles at the end of July, and that rolled over into August, and then, yes, they played the Buffaloes and the Fighters, and they won both of those series, and those were six-game series, and they won the series. But then they played the Hawks and the Eagles and won those series, and then they played the Buffaloes on the road, and they won that series. So they've won every series in August, and including losing today. They were going for a sweep today against the Buffaloes in Osaka, and they didn't get it. But I think they've been very impressive and been winning a lot of games without Brandon Laird, who's hopefully going to be home soon. I know he had to go back to the States because of an injury. Hopefully he'll be back. And I haven't seen that he's back, so I'm assuming he's not back. But pretty impressive. And they tied the Hawks with 16 wins. So both teams went 16-8-1 for the Hawks and 16-8-2 for Lotte.
Yep, I'm perfectly in agreement. It's hard for me to say. I know the Hawks had a really tough stretch in August, which kept them from being, you know, from basically beating both leagues into submission and having them run up a white flag.
Right.
But other than that, you know, I wouldn't fault anybody or denigrate anybody's opinion for thinking the Marines were the best. My observation is that basically there were two really good teams in August, the Marines and the Hawks.
Right.
And then there were three really bad teams, and everybody else was sort of like in between.
Give me your bad teams.
Yeah, well, the bad teams are, in the Central League, we had five teams playing 500.
Just about, yeah, right around 500, yeah.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, Hiroshima was the worst of those five at 12-12.
Yeah, that's right at 500.
Indeed they were, okay. So they were the worst ones. And then the Swallows were
6-101.
The Swallows went 6-17. Basically, so what we had is...
7-17 because they won tonight.
Oh, okay. Then that did not adjust. Okay, so 7-17. I apologize. I don't have the hard data here. It's kind of a...
It's all right.
My data collection now resembles the Carp bullpen.
Hashtag high heat.
Except it doesn't go, you know, it doesn't move fast and it's not athletic.
I blame the manager.
Thank you. My fault. Everything's my fault. So anyway, so the Swallows have been very poor. And I mean, they've been up and down. They've had good times and bad times. Good pieces. Whatever. Anyway, I'm not going to get into the details.
Was it Robert Redford and Barbara Streisand? The way we were? I mean, what are you doing?
The way we were, darn it. No, misty colored memories or whatever. Okay, anyway, the other two teams, Cebu Lions and Oryx Buffaloes.
Buffaloes 6-18 and yep. The Lions 9-15. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, I don't really the Buffaloes again. Even you know even the bad teams they've got good things going for them. It's sort of like the key feature of the Lions in August was Ernesto Mejia playing.
Yes,
because first he played because Hotaki Amakawa hurt his foot.
Mm-hmm.
And so they needed somebody to play first base. So he stepped in, and then Yamakawa DH'd, and the regular DH, Takumi Kuriyama, went to left field. But they liked, you know, they've liked having him in left field for some reason. You know, I guess because he hits the ball.
He hits a ball, and he made a great catch the other night, too.
He did indeed. Dude, yeah. Slow down. You're over 30. But well, that's the thing is he was slow because he'd had some knee issues, but he looked pretty good out there. Still, you know, doesn't run the bases like he did, you know, when he was stealing 18, 20 bases a year 10 years ago. But
right.
But yeah, no. So that's been a big thing. And Ernesto Mejia is not really as much as I love Ernesto, and he's a wonderful guy. He hasn't been overly productive. And so that's...
Well, he hasn't had a chance, though. I mean, I think when we had him on the show last year, I said, you know, they dusted you off and put you out there, and you basically picked up where you left off. How do you stay in shape? He says, hey, man, I'm a pro. I stay ready. And
I think he does.
I fully expected him to be with a different team in MPV this season, and they kept him. And aren't they glad they have, because he won them a game tonight with a two-out, two-strike, ninth-inning home run to put him in the lead. And... you know, that's a great reserve.
It is. I mean, they've had – basically, he has allowed them to rest Yamakawa and Takuya Nakamura.
Mm-hmm.
So – and especially, boy, you know, even though he was 0-for-3 with three punch-outs against the Eagles tonight, but that's his team.
Yeah, it's hit seven home runs this season. Six of them have come against the Eagles in very limited time. But, yeah, I wanted to get back to the Buffaloes because they brought in the new manager, and we were raving about him last week, and they had won their first three under Satoshi Nakajima. And, you know, he gave them that really nice spark. And then they went to a place I'm going to call Reality Dome. most people know it as PayPay Dome, and that's
Costa
where
– de PayPay.
Yeah, that's where everybody who thinks they're good or on a roll the reality dome hits them in the mouth. And they dropped three there, and then they lost the first two against Lotte. And like I said, they found themselves today for a 5-0 win behind the AA team, Adam Jones and Andrew Albers. I don't know, maybe we could call them, I won't call them the double A team because that has a different.
Yeah. That'd be good. Well, they've got three A's between them. So, although I think, A's, triple A's.
There you go. Well, I don't know the middle names. I do not know their middle names. But so I wanted to call them the AA team, and that was good. So they broke a skid there, but they had a bad month, and that was in part why we saw the end of their manager, Norifumi
Nishimura.
Yeah, walking away there.
I think a good thing about the Buffaloes is it's nine games now in which we haven't seen a runner on third base thrown out trying to take home on a double steal that everybody knew was coming.
Yeah. Hey, I think it's just a matter of time. The players have been programmed.
I wonder. But yeah. No, it's they got beat up by the Hawks, and I wish I knew what Yoshinobu Yamamoto's deal is, home and road.
Oh, it's a home road thing.
It has been a home road thing this year. And we're going to see, because on Tuesday, tomorrow night for early adapters here this week in the podcast, look to see Kodai Senga and Yoshinobu Yamamoto go head to head again in Osaka.
And that's going to be your viewing event.
It is going to be my viewing event. So all you JBallIsland.com members and people who really want to be members, please subscribe, and we'll join us for Tuesday's game.
Where can they find that?
They can find that at JBallIsland.com. Please subscribe, and all subscribers will receive an invitation.
Okay. And I did want to mention the Dragons because they had basically a good month. Now, You weren't giving them credit. They were two games over 500. They weren't. I know you said basically 500. So
yeah,
they were.
I meant 500 and better.
I see. And the Bay Stars were 14-11. I don't count ties. So that's, if anybody's out there saying you forgot to say the ties, just because I wear ties, I don't say ties.
You say malaise.
Okay, I'm going to skip that.
So John Gibson nationality vocabulary check. Okay.
There you go. The Dragons, they had a really good stretch, and then they had to leave home because they won 5 of their 13 wins in the month. They only got 5 of them on the road, and they had a really good stretch at home. And this past week, they got swept at Hanshin, and it was really weird. It's just that off day came, they traveled, and I think they left their bats in Nagoya or something. I don't know. They couldn't score down there, and they couldn't pitch either. And Hanshin had just come up, as we talked about last week. They had 30-plus, maybe 37, I think it was, innings that they went scoreless. But they didn't have any trouble scoring against the Dragons. And so they meaning the Dragons, dropped some games. They were really on pace probably to win 16 games just along with the Hawks and the Marines had they, not gotten swept in Hanshin. And maybe after winning that first game at Tokyo Dome against the Giants, figured out how to win today with all the chances they had, but they couldn't do it. So they ended up going 13-11. But the Bay Stars also had a good month. It didn't seem like it. They had stretches here and there, but they didn't win. They didn't go on a big, long winning streak or have a gaudy streak like the Dragons did that kind of stood out. But 14-11 is a really good stretch for them, considering all things considered.
Yeah, considering they got no hit one day.
Yeah, that too.
I mean, is it just me or is this just a really fun season?
I think it's not just you. You know how I love watching all the games and how my head's exploding, especially, when we had this incident where a third base coach with the Giants is helping Hiroyuki Nakajima get back to the base, and no umpire decides that it's assisting and all that. So I mean, you know, it's just good to talk about. It's good to watch the games. I have fun watching the no hitters, the near no hitters. And for any guys who don't follow NPB Reddit on Twitter, you're missing some absolute comedy as the Swallows really continue to pile up the L's, because the more losses, the more entertaining he gets. And I remember he was a guest on the show a few years back and told us he was a Swallows fan. And they're getting to the point where, you know, every time they win, they're stopping a skid, and that's not good. But they beat the Bay Stars tonight. But yeah, it's just fun. The whole season is fun. Whether your team is struggling at times or whether your team is winning, it's just fun to watch the games. There's a lot of excitement. So
Part of the pleasure for me that's a little different is I alluded to it. I get to use the word allude to and twice in one show, so that's a bonus. You ring the bell. I mentioned before the bit about with the COVID-19 issues and the desire for the players to get more rest, you know, to ensure they get enough rest, that I think we're seeing more and more players who are untried. We're seeing more and more rookies. I mean, I don't ever remember writing about so many rookies. It's like every game, there's like two or three of them. Oh, and where did these relievers come from? You know, and who are these guys? And you see them.
Those guys have Swallows written across the front.
They do, but there's, you know, in the Buffalo, where the Buffaloes, a lot of Buffaloes, but the Eagles as well, and the Hawks as well, and the Dragons as well. And I just really enjoy seeing all these new kids, especially when they, you know, they come out and they look like they got something. And you think, wow, that's a future. You know, that's a, you know, you see, you see guys and you say, wow, he's got something. You watch his pitches. You know it's hard. You know, inconsistency is part of the game. You know, when you see somebody do something really well, it's just so much fun. And I'm eating it up.
Okay. All right, let's go to fielding questions. So Pete Duffy in the Kansai region via Facebook,
he's not from Canada?
He hit us back. Well, he doesn't live in Canada. I believe he lives. I don't know. I think it's the Kansai region.
Okay, we've opened the door back to Kansai. We had kind of a Canadian channel going for a while.
I see. I gotcha. All right. Well, he asks a couple weeks ago, what do you guys think of the Carp young gun, Masato Morishita? He definitely doesn't look like a rookie. Is he the best under 23 guy around? He said, dude. I changed it to guy. So for me, I would say no. But of the guys actually out there pitching right now, maybe. I like Shosei Togo of the Yomiuri Giants. I don't know if I like him better. I think he's going to end up with more wins just because he plays with the Giants. But I like him as well. And he's younger. And, you know, Morishita turns 23, or if he didn't turn 23, it's either soon or last week. So he's already 23, but Togo is 20. And I think you're going to ask me about guys under 23. I'm going to give you guys who aren't necessarily pitching at the moment. And so for me, Noki Sasaki of the Lotte Marines, I think he's the best pitcher. And I haven't even seen him throw live yet. So.
And he's not throwing because they're concerned about his arm.
Right. I did read some report that said he's not going to throw for another time for a while. It might not that he's not going to throw. I can't remember what the report said. If he wasn't going to throw for the rest of the year,
I wouldn't be surprised if he's not going to throw the rest of the year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either. That's unfortunate, but he's the best in my mind. And I think. And another pitcher I think is going to come along here is Yasunobu Okugawa of the Yakult Swallows. And it might take him a little bit longer to get out there. I mean, obviously, Morishita went to college, I think, and he's very poised. And I think that's what you're seeing. You know, you don't see Morishita get rattled on the mound, even when he gives up some runs early. Or, you know, sometimes you throw the ball around the plate. These guys are good. They're going to make contact. They're going to hit it hard sometimes. And if you make mistakes, especially in the zone, they're going to be able to do some damage. It doesn't always have to be a home run. It could be after you walk a couple guys or you don't get a great play in the outfield behind you because, you know, there's not a lot of that play tonight. Yeah, Seiya Suzuki almost made a catch, but he just couldn't get there. But anyway, yeah, it was unfortunate. I thought that was an out when it left the bat off of.
I too. It's like he's
running in slow motion
at the last instant. It's like his feet were spinning, but his body wasn't moving forward. You could see the ball was.
Yeah, it's it might be fatigue or something that we're seeing with Seiya Suzuki. Anyway, so as far as stuff, I don't think Morishita is that great. He throws hard. But I think Togo is just as good and maybe has a little bit better location. And in fact, when Togo decides to go out of the zone with a pitch and not necessarily bounce it, but just, you know, get a guy to look at a pitch and change eye levels and all that stuff and then make you miss at balls, he's much better at it than Morishita. But, you know, it's all relative. Their guys are on different teams, so... but I have no doubt Morishita is going to be around for a while. He's really calm and cool. He kind of reminds me of a Kenshin Kawakami type who, you know, he doesn't have any pitch in particular that's going to blow you away, but you look up and it's seventh inning or eighth inning and you're losing. And you're like, you know, we've been making contact on this guy all night long. How come we don't have any runs or how come we only have a couple of runs? So I think he's going to be that kind of pitcher.
Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit because for me, there's no doubt.
Don't lie.
Okay, I'm going to cheat a whole lot because when, you know, Morishita, of course, is my favorite new young pitcher. Although there's a bunch of guys I do like. I also like Yusei Kuwano of the Carp quite a bit. Of the Fighters, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yusei Kuwano of the Fighters. But the best under 23 pitcher in Japan, come on. Come on.
Who did I miss?
Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He's 20.
Okay, I didn't realize he was under 23. He's been around.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. So maybe if we throw out the guy who's already the ace pitcher of his team.
Hey, you're not supposed to be under 23. Get back over there.
I know. Isn't that it's sad. It's sad how good this guy is at such a young age. I mean, and like Yuki Matsui, who seemed like who's baby faced and looks like he's going to be Peter Pan for the rest of his life. You know, he's got the TSL young forever gene, but he's in his like seventh pro season.
Right. Seventh, huh? Yeah. Yamamoto just turned 22. So I didn't look at him. So you said you're cheating. How did you cheat then?
Because I think we may not have been spoken, but we were on the wavelength of guys who are less experienced.
Probably, yeah. And he's in his fourth year, Yamamoto is. So yeah. All right, yeah.
Him, and I like more. I got no arguments with me, Morishita. I saw a funny thing in the spring and I think the Carp changed his arm slot. They wanted him to come more over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at first when he struggled with that a little at first.
Who, Morishita?
Yeah. He was basically a high three quarters and now he's almost straight over the top. And, you know, he's sort of wavered back and forth. And I think that's been an issue. But I'll tell you, his stuff over the top really jumps. It's just he's just got electric spin on his pitches and good command. What you said, poised is right. He knows what he's doing, like you said about Shosei Togo. I lack the number of times watching Shosei Togo pitch carefully that I can comment on it, but it's just a joy to watch. Again, to go back to people who do things really well, when you see a good pitch or you see a guy working well against hitters, sort of like. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned this about, I'm going to go back to Yuki Matsui. He's not a young pitcher, but I did mention last week that I saw so much in his previous start that I was just thrilled when I saw him take a step forward this week and win his first start as a, you know, first game as a starter in about 2 years.
Okay.
So that's just a joy. So I just wish, you know, it's a great question. And I'll stick with my guy, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. But the best new pitcher is going to be Morishita. In my eyes, I don't think that there's nobody I've seen that's better. There may be somebody I don't know, but there's nobody I've seen who's better.
All right. The next question is from Steven in the Kansai region. And that's a Steven with a P-H-E-N at the end. So he hit us up via Facebook and he said, I just watched the Tigers lose in the night due to the outfield being drawn in with a runner on second. And there was only one out. And the batter hit the ball over the head of the center fielder who, if he was positioned normally, would have easily caught the ball. I'm not sure bringing in the outfielders makes sense, but I do see that so often in MPV. Jim, what does the data show on this? Is it a fool's errand? Like bunting has been proven to be in professional baseball using the run expectancy analysis. Thanks.
Well, I'm going to say I don't have the data to show. I wish I did, and I do, because I don't have positioning data. So I can't really say. I'm probably not going to get close to this. I would disagree that bunting has been shown to be a fool's errand by run expectancy. I think it's an open question because it's always baseball is a little bit like poker. You have to cultivate your options. You have to cultivate your the number of things you're able to do in different circumstances in order to be able to maximize. You know, you got to open up the playing field a little bit. If you never bunt, you know, you can't bring the infield in. So, I think bunting is still an open question among analysts and researchers. It's certainly less so in Japan. Okay, now I'll go back to the real thing. It drives me nuts to watch the plays you referred to. And in fact, I think the day you wrote that, the day John sent me your question, I had posted something almost exactly like that on the blog. It might have been the same game. I don't remember.
Probably was, and they lost one like that tonight too. That was one of the reasons Suzuki couldn't make that play is because they were drawn in a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is the point. You try to cut off the run at from second from scoring, and it changes the game. And I just don't know whether it's a good thing. I've seen balls that should have been, you know, they're defending against with a runner on third with two outs, or a runner on second with two outs. And they're making easy fly balls into game winners,
or harrowing catches.
I've seen teams take away, you know, like bringing the outfield in when there's no chance of a sacrifice fly scoring the runner. So why are you playing up? You know, like what's the point? What are you trying to? You don't have to play in arm range. So I don't always get it, and I wish I had the data. I do wish I had the data, but until the TrackMan data until StatCast and whatever positioning data they have comes to Japan, we're probably not going to get an answer.
Well, I have an answer. I hate it, and I hate it more. And only sometimes does it work, but I think for me to do that, it would have to be in a walk-off or a last inning situation for me where if the team gets that runner home for second from second base, the game is over. That's probably the only time I would really want to use it. I might pinch up a little bit. I might scoot up, but I don't want to do what the Tigers did, which is or the Carp did, which is I guess they exchanged losses that way, right?
I suppose.
The Tigers lost one and the Carp lost one. So
it was an outfield exchange program.
Yes. So where you just say, look, I want to cut off that run. And I'm thinking, you know, a pop fly can win a game. And it drives me nuts. I think maybe it's one of those things that it has been part of the NPB identity and woven into the fabric from so long ago, like the unwritten NPB rules that we had a copy of last week. Mm-hmm.
We had to burn it, though.
Yeah, we did. That managers just do it. I think they might even do it without even thinking. And, you know, we don't see Alex Ramirez, Rami Khan, he's not doing that very much, though. But, you know, the guys just do it. Yeah. I don't know that it makes sense or anything. They just do it.
Well, there was I'll go back to a study, and I like much of the research I did in the 90s, it's sort of like ended up in the same burn bag as the Unwritten Rule. So I don't have a copy anymore. But basically, I studied the Cebu Lions, were the most famous team for bunting in the early 90s, and the sacrifice led by their maniacal bunting mad manager, Masaaki Mori. And what I found was, it shouldn't have helped them, but it did. And the reason it helped them is, as I said, you want to do things to keep your options open. By sacrificing with the number two hitter, it brought out, this is how I read the data, outfielders were coming in, and their number three and four hitters were hitting fewer home runs, but they were hitting a statistically significantly higher number of doubles. So these guys who normally would not have driven in it, and what happened was their production went through the roof with a runner on second, because the team's response to having a runner on second was predictable. And that's one of the great things about baseball, is if you can figure out what your opponent's going to do in a certain situation, you can take advantage of it, whether that is by bunting or by not bunting or by, you know, or by being unpredictable. So I did love the question, because the whole point is, you know, what's the best utilization of your outs and your options. So it's a great discussion starter.
All right. Well, Pete and Stephen, thank you very much.
Remember
to cultivate your options. Just make sure that
you're cultivating ours. So I appreciate that.
Okay. All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up via email at yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast and the Facebook page. You can leave us a message there. So Jim is having his next live event on Tuesday. Check out jballallen.com for that. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks, virtually perhaps.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at jballallen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag high heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.